It's great to be here. Thanks a lot for the opportunity. So I'll talk about the use of SMC for inference in graphical models. And this is very much joint work with Christian Nesset back in Linköping and Fredrik, who is now here in Cambridge. So first of all, what's a graphical model? I'll just briefly talk you through it. So a graphical model, it's a probabilistic model where you use a graph consisting of some vertices and some edges that tells you about the structure of the model you're working with. So the vertices correspond to the random variables, and then the edges tells you about the connections in between these random variables or nodes, if you like. So for example, for a state-space model, so I'm not going to talk about state-space models today, but you're all familiar with them. So in terms of a graphical model, that's what it looks like. So it's a very simple one, just a chain with our unknown latent states, and then you have some measurements associated to that. So that's also a directed graph, and from a directed graph, you can straightforwardly write down the joint distribution of all the variables that you have in that graph. So it's just the product of all the individual random variables conditioned on all their parents. And in a state-space model, each random variable only have one parent, so the previous state or the state that the measurement belongs to, so to speak. Right. So that's one graphical model. Then you have undirected graphical models. So that's what we'll be talking about today. So in an undirected graphical model, there are, well, the difference is there are no arrows on the links. So there are no notion on direction. But for these, you can also write down the joint distribution. And you do that as a product over the factors, where each factor is over a so-called clique. And a clique is just a set of nodes such that there is pairwise interaction in between all of them. Okay? That's the second type of graph. The third type of graph is a factor graph. So a factor graph, there you make these factors explicit in the graph, so the size, as I call them. And you can convert any directed or undirected graph into a factor graph. So if you have an algorithm that works on a factor graph, that's a good thing. Then you can deal with any directed or undirected graph. So the algorithms we'll have a look at here, they work on the factor graph. Right. So hopefully intuitive preview of what we're doing here. As you know, SMC samplers, they are used to approximate the sequence of probability distributions on a sequence of probability spaces. So I think, and that's why they are, of course, very useful for dynamical systems, for state-space models, because there you have this sequence built up in a very, very natural way by our filtering distributions. Now, we can also use the same idea for many other models, and that I think is a quite possibly a very underutilized idea. So I'll try to show how we can do that for graphs now. So the key idea is to make use of a sequential decomposition of the graphical model, and if we could find such a sequential decomposition, then we can just use our standard SMC samplers, whichever one you prefer on that model. So we don't introduce any new SMC samplers whatsoever. Just introducing a sequential decomposition of the graphical model, and then we can use whichever sampler we want. And when we have such a decomposition and an SMC sampler, we can, of course, as you've heard a lot this week, we can just put that into an MCMC algorithm and use particle Markov chain Monte Carlo to do all sorts of other interesting things, which are highly relevant here as well, and I'll briefly get back to that later on. Okay. So, brief outline of what I want to do. I'm not an information theory guy whatsoever, but we found an interesting example in information theory, so we're just going to use that and solve that to give you an idea what you can do. So that's a very specific problem. Then we'll zoom out a bit and do this for general graphical models, so whether they are discrete or continuous or whatever topology you might have. And then we'll see that's not enough, because as you all know, you might have some unknown parameters that you want to learn, or you might be interested. We're still going to suffer from particle degeneracy, of course, so So if you're interested in any marginal distribution, SMC is not going to help you, but then we can build up particle Gibbs with ancestor sampling. We build up a kernel that we can use within MCMC and handle that as well. And then I'll finish with another example of a Markov random field that's just a fancy name for an undirected graph. And then some conclusions. And again, if you remember something from this talk, it should be we're using standard SMC samplers on possibly non-standard construction of the intermediate target distributions. Okay, so this is we're looking at a two-dimensional channel. So normally you work with one-dimensional channels, and that's what Channon and many others have looked at, and you can write down closed-form solutions for some of the capacities there. Two-dimensional channels are interesting, for example, for optical storage or magnetic storage, I've been told at least. So that means one-dimensional channel is just a chain, 2D is 2D, so that's it. And then we have some constraints on this channel, and that is that if you have a 1 somewhere, then you can't have a 1 next to it, or above it, or below it, or on the other side of it. So as you see by this little toy example here. And then we can actually model, and that's not our work, other people have done that. So you can model such a channel using an undirected graphical model. And then, in the following way. So I show you here just using 6x6 variables. And then each variable is binary, so it's either 0 or 1. And then we encode the interactions using the size here to tell you. So if two adjacent ones are 1, then it's 0, and otherwise it's 1. From this, so when we accept that, it's now just back to a standard undirected graphical model. That means we can straightforwardly write down the joint PDF for all those variables that sits in that graph. And then people found out that for such a channel of dimension m by m, of a finite size, the noiseless capacity, so the capacity is something you're interested in because it tells you how much information you can transmit over this channel. So it's one of these fundamental things you want to figure out. And that's actually related to the normalization constant, or the partition function, if you like. So that's all good and nice. The hard thing is that, unfortunately, you cannot compute this in closed form since the complexity is quite terrible. So you want to find an approximate way of doing that. So we're going to have a look at doing that using SMC. So we borrowed the example from this paper in the transactions last year. Right, so... what you want to do, well, we want to use the structure that we have. So this is just another cartoon of our model to show you a few tricks we're using. So each column are now called fat x. So that fat x1, for example, that's all the variables that you have in your first column, and so on and so forth. And then we just pull them together, giving us an undirected chain where each variable is higher dimensional. But that's all good and fine. So by doing this, let's see if I have that here. Yeah. So by doing this, we have again a chain model. You can think for intuition of the standard state space model, if you like, similar type of structure. So we can then write down the joint PDF, and now you start to see a very natural sequence for the target distributions that we'll use. This is sort of the similar type you see in an HMM, actually, or a state space model. And that is quite, that's more or less what we need in order to be able to use an SMC sampler for this. So the target distributions, we're calling gamma k here, and you just build them up as you see here from the individual size you have in the model. So let me briefly get, let's see. Here, I give you the result where we use our SMC sampler Again, it's a standard SMC sampler. That's why I don't give you the algorithm here. You know what it looks like. So a standard SMC sampler targeting this this gamma distribution that we just built up. And I compare that to Nando's tree sampler, which is what they used in the previous paper. And you can see there's actually an order of magnitude. It's a log-log scale there. And we plot the mean square error versus time here. So it clearly improves quite a lot from the previous state of the art for this problem. And I should say also, I mean, Christian did a lot of work in implementing this really efficiently, because you can actually use a fully adapted sampler in doing this. So we can use forward filtering and backward simulation on the columns, if you remember, on the columns here. So for each column, you can just run forward filtering, backward simulation, which helps you a lot in this case. So that I think is in itself interesting, because it improves a fair bit on what you could do before. But this was a very, very special case, of course. We had binary variables, 0 or 1, a very special structure which we could use. So an interesting question is now, of course, can we do this in a more general setting? Otherwise, it's interesting in itself for this particular application, but can you do it more generally? So let's have a look. The answer is yes. So again, what is the ID? Just hammering in the ID here. So I think this idea of constructing an artificial sequence of target distributions is, again, quite possibly underutilized, I think. And it's a good way for people who know SMC to try out challenging problems from other areas. I just showed you one little example of that we borrowed from information theory here. I think there are quite a lot more that can be done there. The tricky thing, of course, is to find this structure. How do you find your sequence of target distributions? And I'm not sure how to do that in a general graphical model yet, but at least I can show you a few things which hopefully interesting enough. So again, the key idea is to make use of such a sequential decomposition. And then once we have that again, then we just use our standard SMC algorithms, whichever you prefer. Okay, so let's have a look at how you can build up a sequential decomposition of a more general graphical model. I don't know of any unique way of doing this. I don't know of how to do that in the best way, but at least this is one way of how you can do it. And then I think it's a very interesting and highly open question of how to find the best way of actually doing that. right, so we look at the joint PDF of all the random variables indexed by this set V. We can write that as a product of these psi's that are indexed on the cliques, as we spoke about, and keep this little toy model in the back of your head. So that's the corresponding factor graph. And again, the algorithm we have works on the factor graphs. So we start by just taking the first factor. So that's call that gamma 1. So that's our first target. And x script L1, which is, so that's the corresponding random variables that belongs to this factor. Then we build up the next one. Just adding the next psi, the next factor, and x calligraphic L2 is now all the random variables that sits in that. And we continue like this. So what we do then is that then we let these psi k's, which contain all the random variables up to step k in this sequential build-up, so to speak. So this script, calligraphic ik, is the indices of the variables in the domain of this psi k now. So again, in the back of your mind, you can think of the chain that you're all familiar to, the state space model. This is just we're continuing over a two- or three-dimensional structure, whatever it might be. So the sequential decomposition is now going to be built upon these factors, the psi k's. So you just multiply them together as you move along along your factor graph. And here is where you realize, if you think of, imagine a general graph, whatever it might look like in your head, and then it's of course not unique how you do this. And depending on how you do this, you're going to struggle more or less when you implement it. And I'm pretty sure that we have seen that the performance of the resulting sampler is going to be different and so on. So the answer to that, I don't know. And by construction, when you come towards the end and when you have added the final factor, then you have all the random variables in there, and that is the one that you're looking for, that you're interested in, because that's the joint distribution of all the variables that you have. So again, then we do that, use an SMC sampler to target that. So we generate the ancestors, so your parents, they are very important people to you and to the particles, so I'll get back to the ancestors a bit later on. So you generate them in the resampling step, and then you need to propose new particles. And here I should explain the notations. I use Xi for the new random variables that were not present in your sequence before. Clearly, when you add a new factor, maybe some of the variables that are associated to that factor, you might have seen them before because maybe they were associated with a previous factor or some other. But there will probably be a few new variables, so they are Xi. So then we just add them to our particles system. And then we reweight. And what's really nice about this is that, as you all know, that's been mentioned a lot this week, we get an unbiased estimate of the partition function or the normalization constant, which is, again, if you think of the information theory example from the beginning, that was exactly what we were interested in there. but it's useful for other things as well. Right, so that's good. We can do a few things with that. Some problems, though, with SMC, it's not quite enough because it's not straightforward how to deal with a parameter learning problem. And if you want to have a look at one of the marginals, so look at some of the variables further back in the chain, then due to particle degeneracy, you know that you're not going to get a good estimate of that. So you need to fix that somehow. So one solution is the one we're going to use here is to use particle Gibbs with ancestor sampling. You can, of course, use some other PMC-MC version if you want. And that allows us to construct some very useful MC-MC kernels for graphical models. And that allows us to, for example, simulate blocks of variables using an MC-MC scheme. And it opens up for learning, even though I'm not going to talk too much about that today. So let me just briefly tell you about the ancestor sampling ID. That's useful, very useful for us here, but it's also useful in other areas. I'm going to use the same little illustration that Eric used on Tuesday from Fredrik generated to explain this. So the original conditional particle filter, it works like this. Let me just play it out for you. So what you see happening here, you just see the particle system evolving, and the conditional particle filter you need to condition on a certain reference trajectory or preferred path or whatever you want to call it. It's a blue thing here. So that blue trajectory must sit in your particle system when you're ready, and then obviously due to particle degeneracy, that's not going to be helpful to us because when we get to the very end, we need to select a new path. That we are going to, if we put this in a particle Gibbs, we select a new path, and we're then going to condition on our next CPF on this particular path. And when you look at the history here, that doesn't look very good because you haven't moved around. And if you're not moving around, well, things are not going well, not for MC-MC either. So let's try and figure out the way of moving around here. So again, the problem is we have slow mixing due to the particle degeneracy. So the solution is try to change the reference trajectory somehow. You could do that by issuing a backward sweep to backward simulation. What we'll do is we're going to change your parents. So we'll give you new parents if you're the reference trajectory, so to speak. So at each point in time, you're going to be associated with a new parent. If we can do that in a proper way, then clearly we're changing the reference trajectory, and maybe that helps. So the the good thing of this ancestor sampling ideas, you achieve the same thing you do with a backward simulation or backward sampling without having to do an explicit backward step, because we do it as we move forward in the forward sweep. And that opens up for using this in some more interesting models. State space models are extremely interesting and very useful, but there are also other more trickier models like the graphical models or non-Markovian state space models, or we're also playing around with no real results there yet, but with Bayesian non-parametric models. We'll see what happens. So in one sentence, ancestor sampling is conceptually very similar to backward simulation, but instead of using a separate forward and backward pass, we do one forward pass, and then at each point in time, we give you new patterns. So let me play you that. So the same example as before, but we're now giving you new patterns each time. And then it's going to look like this. So let me pause here. So Frederick illustrates this by breaking up the blue path, because at each point in time, you select a new ancestor, a new parent. So that means, graphically, that means you're breaking up the path. And that's going to be interesting, because when you then select, when we come to the end and it's time for you to select an entire path, that path is definitely going to be different from the blue one here, graphically speaking now. So let's see what happens. When you get towards the end, you get the red thing here. You probably don't remember what the initial one looked like, but it's very different from the red thing, which means you are moving around in state space, and that's going to help you as an MCMC sampler. So that was all just intuition, not proving anything or any that. I'm not going to do that here, but we have done that, and that's in papers, and you can have a look if you want. But what's good is we have a way of stochastically mapping this blue thing into this red thing, such that good properties are preserved. So we still have an ergodic Markov kernel as a result, and it's going to leave the target distribution that you are interested in invariant. So it's not going to end up doing any nasty things. It's well behaved, and it gives you a way of moving around in state space without losing too much. All right. So that was like a micro module on the ancestor sampling ID that you can use for a whole bunch of models. Now we're going to use it for graphical models here. All right. So I should tell you a few words about partial blocking, which is very useful in this example and in other examples as well. So what's that all about? Well, in terms of sampling these variables, you have a couple of extremes. So you have at the one extreme, you have sample all the variables jointly, and at the other extreme, you sample one variable at a time. And if you think, again, using your intuition for Gibbs samplers, for example, sampling one variable at a time, if you have a high correlation, high dependency among the variables, is maybe not the best idea. Then it might be better to sample chunks of variables and so on. So what PGAS offers us here is it offers us a middle ground here, where we can trade off in between these two different extremes, if you like. So in terms, how am I doing on time? 9 minutes. All right. So in terms of equations, the partial blocking. So let this script M, where M is indexed from 1 up to capital M, be a partition of all your variables. So if you're sampling one at a time, then it's just each and every variable you have, or it's a group of variables, so some partition. That means ideally we could then construct a Gibbs sampler by simulating from these conditional distributions where we have X script VM conditioned on all variables but those script M in the usual fashion. So the problem is, in general, it's completely impossible to sample from these conditionals. So again, one solution here is to use PGAS or some other PMC-MC algorithm you might prefer. So let me, I'll spend the rest of my time talking about an example. So a very concrete example, which is a Gaussian Markov random field. Why do we choose that? Not because it's extremely exciting, but because we can actually compute things in closed form. So we can compare the stuff we have to well, reasonably well-behaved things to see what it does. So a Gaussian, let me maybe quickly show. So it looks like this. So it's a 10 by 10 field. The Gaussian, the Markov random fields are quite heavily used by in image processing computer vision, because it's a beautiful way of modeling an image, for example. Think of it as all the pixels, for example. And then the joint distribution of all our latent variables, x, and the measurements, y. So again, 10 by 10, so we have 100 each. So the joint distribution, since it's Gaussian, it's just a product of a whole bunch of Gaussians. And we set the standard deviations to 1 and 0.1. So 0.1 for the interactions. So that means you have a fair bit of dependency going on throughout the model. Setting that to 0 would make the problem very different. But having some dependency makes it a bit more challenging. And the goal now is to compute the posterior distribution. So the joint distribution of all your latent states given all the measurements that you have. So again, if you want an example, think of what you see the detectives doing in these movies where you enhance images. So that means the measurements you have, that's the pixel values you have for your model. And the posterior distribution is then the nice enhanced image where you use all the information you have to figure out what goes on. All right, so how are we going to do that? We're going to run 4 different MCMC samplers to do this. So standard one step at a time Gibbs, which if you guess might suffer a bit here due to the dependence. We're then going to use Nando's tree sampler, which works perfectly for this case since it's Gaussian. So we can actually compute all the things we need. And then we run a fully blocked PGAS sampler and then a partially blocked PGAS sampler. So let me just show you what the way in which we block the samplers, so how we divide the various variables. So it's like, think of the colors doesn't really come out here, I guess, but on the right-hand side, think of it as a snake spiraling in. And in that way, you can build up 2 different snakes, so you're then separating the variables, if you see what I mean. So that's what's used in the so-called tree sampler. And that's the way we're going to partially block the PGA sampler as well. And then the fully blocked, obviously, then we just do it all at once. So let's see. I plot the ACF, the autocorrelation function, against the lag here. And the first one is the Gibbs sampler. So, well, that's what it looks like. And then if we run the tree sampler, which is, for this model, like an ideal blocked Gibbs sampler, since, again, we can compute all the things explicitly, so we can sample the variables the way they should be sampled, if you like. And here, we recompiled the figures the other day just to get rid of the blue color, so we don't, oh, sorry, the green color, so we don't have to pull down the curtain, so hopefully it comes down. So then we used PGAS with partial blocking, using exactly the same blocking as we used for the tree sampler. And then what you get when you think of it, actually, this is just an approximation of the tree sampler in this case. So it's reassuring to see that we get the same result, even for fairly few particles, 50 in this case. And then we run PGAS fully blocked. And when you think of it, that should be better because you're sampling all the variables at the same time. So you can take care of the fact that they're correlated. And it does improve a fair bit, at least in terms of the ACF here. It is, the downside, I should say, is that it is computationally more expensive. So there's always something to pay. So let me conclude what we've been doing here. So we've derived SMC-based inference methods for graphical models of arbitrary topologies. It can be discrete or continuous. The key insight is to make use of this sequential decomposition of the graphical models. And again, I'm just using standard SMC samplers here, nothing fancy. And then I showed two examples. The first one was borrowed from information theory, where we could compute the channel capacity better than what an order of magnitude better than what's done before. And then I showed you an example where we infer the latent variables in this MRF. And if you have any interesting or challenging graphical models, just let us know. We put, if you want to read something, we put stuff on archive. We'll put the information theory example there next week. And thanks for listening.
I apologize in advance because I don't remember all the details about the computation, the basic computations for graphical models. But I wanted to ask you whether, first, some of the these constructions, these sequential constructions of passing through the graph. I mean, they are used, for example, in message passing algorithms. So I was wondering whether this way that you decompose somehow relates to that. And just to add a question to this is, you don't assume anything about the graph, like whether it's decomposable or you don't need any assumptions of the graph structure to build this.
Good. So let's start with the first. It's a very good question. So as you say, I mean, if you pull up a textbook, and there are thick textbooks on how to do inference in graphical models.
Why don't remember all the
details. And then you have what's called message passing algorithms. That's the algorithms that you're traditionally using to do computations here, where you do similar things to what we're doing. I mean, you pass messages around in the graph that then carries the information around. So there are, previously, there's been, Eric Sudreth, for example, had an algorithm more than 10 years ago now, which is called, yes, thank you. So what you do then you start with an algorithm called belief propagation, which is, and loopy belief propagation, which you have, and then you have no convergence guarantees. And then you do an SMC approximation of that. So then you have, well, in the spirit of this week, an approximation, I guess, which is hard to prove guarantees. But since we pull this thing back to a standard SMC sampler, we can enjoy all the work that you've done. I mean, we have all your convergence results to rely on, since it's a standard SMC sampler all of a sudden. What was your second question?
Whether the construction requires...
Right. So not what we have seen so far. I mean, as long as you can build up this sequence of distributions, it's all fine. And that means whatever...
The question is, do you need some constructs for this to be numerically... the complexity of doing that, for the complexity of this to be a good one, do you require some...
Right. Yeah, so that's I don't dare to answer yet. Because as I said, there are all sorts of openings on how to build up this... how to construct this sequence of target distributions. And since we've just looked at the square graphs here, yeah. we just walk like this and hope for the best. But I'm very sure that there are much more clever ways of doing this. And that's really interesting to see if you can figure that out, how to actually do this. Because it has, as you said, it will affect the complexity.
The worry is that it could be an NP-hard problem. Why I'm asking. It could be potential. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that, but I'm worried about the complex. You know, if you have this kind of very nice structure, generally you can do nice stuff. You know, graphs.
I don't dare to answer that in general.
Probably running short of time, so if we can thank Thomas again.